Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
Trouble for the country's biggest bank.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. Citigroup reports fourth quarter earnings tomorrow, and this morning CNBC is reporting on how disastrous things will be. A possible write-down of $24 billion from bad mortgage investments. That's double what some analysts had been predicting. There could also be layoffs of as many as 20,000 workers, and a very high risk that Citigroup could cut its dividend. Asian stock markets were down overnight after Goldman Sachs said economies throughout the Pac Rim will begin to slow. In Europe, the major markets have edged higher this morning. The price of gold broke through $900 an ounce in London. Amtrak management and its unions are scheduled to resume contract talks this week. Workers are threatening to walk on January 30th. Now, if a strike happens, it wouldn't just disable the intercity train service up and down the Northeast Corridor. It could mean an economic hit for New York City. Ashley Milne-Tight has more.
Almost 200,000 people a day take the commuter railroad into Penn Station. Amtrak happens to own and run much of that railroad track. Martin Robbins teaches at Rutgers University's Transportation Center. He says a strike would mean havoc for Manhattan-bound commuters.
The workers that perform the various services that keep the commuter trains running would also recognize the strike, and there would be a total shutdown in the Northeast Corridor. The economic impact of that would be catastrophic.
But Ross Capon of the National Association of Railroad Passengers thinks a strike is unlikely. He says Amtrak will probably meet its union's demands, especially given the government's position.
They're facing a Bush-appointed presidential emergency board that sided with the unions, which is sort of an anomaly, I guess.
He does have one worry. He says Amtrak might claim it can't placate the unions without cutting passenger services. I'm Ashley Milne-Tight for Marketplace.
The film Borat may have put Kazakhstan on the map. Crude oil will likely keep it there. The country is boasting the world's biggest discovery in the last three decades. A group of oil giants led by Italy's Eni are developing it. But as Megan Williams reports, Kazakhstan has just changed the rules.
It was a sweet deal for the Italian Eni and its partners. Access to the world's biggest oil field in decades. Kazakhstan would share costs of production and take a slight 8% share. That was a decade ago when Kazakhstan was barely coping after communism. Crude oil was cheap and the country was happy to attract investors. Then came costly delays and environmental concerns. Kazakhstan wanted a new deal. Now it's got one. Double its original stake, a greater share in profit, and compensation for delays. Some analysts compare the move to Russia taking over the Royal Dutch Shell project in the Pacific Ocean last year. By asserting its rights, Kazakhstan is poised to earn $7 billion more. I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
Record label EMI is set to announce a radical restructuring tomorrow. Layoffs of as many as 2,000. EMI will also slash marketing cost and drop some artists. EMI's new owner, Terra Firma Capital, wants its investment to pay off. The private equity group spent more than $6 billion last year to buy EMI. More than 20 prominent EMI artists are protesting, including Robbie Williams and Coldplay. If these cuts are steep, artists like these are considering not delivering their next albums.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, partnering with more than 70 national patient organizations to educate and support patients and their families. Online at Medtronic.com. And by LendingTree, where you can choose up to four customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win.
Enrollment is up at art colleges from Manhattan to Los Angeles, but it's still no easier to make a living in art than when Jackson Pollock was slinging paint. Commercial galleries are a picky lot, so many artists are increasingly taking the entrepreneurial path. From New York, Lisa Gray reports.
Most budding artists don't have the money to open a gallery. Sarah Vanderbeek is one of the lucky few. She opened her gallery, Guild and Gray School, after she left New York's Cooper Union. She says, like most artists, she left school intending to continue the work she did in the classroom.
When you're in school, you're in intense dialogue, and then when you leave, you have to create that dialogue instead.
Artists love that word, dialogue. They mean the relationships they form with each other to help their creative process. When Vanderbeek opened her own gallery with two other artists, she created her own little community. She's inspiring dialogue, but that's not necessarily good business practice.
We never enter a show thinking of the business aspects or the sales. We usually just want the best exhibition that we can present and to enable the artist to whatever level they want to go to.
It's a risky approach. Artists need supportive galleries. But if a gallery can't make money, it's not much use to anyone. Joel Beck has been an artist and gallery owner since the mid-1990s. He says running his Manhattan gallery takes more than just an eye for good art.
Being an artist is a bit like running your own small business. If you're not somewhat clever about business, as an artist, you can't succeed very long.
These artist gallerists look for a happy medium. Matthew Dipple runs Museum 52 in New York's Lower East Side. He's an artist too, and he understands the importance of investing in new talent. He says he wants to encourage emerging artists, but he needs to find established artists whose work will sell.
Part of the risk of running the gallery is that you are hoping that what you find interesting and exciting, that other people will.
Artists are opening their own galleries because they don't feel represented in the commercial art world. Their friends gave them the support they needed to develop as artists. And a splash of entrepreneurial smarts is helping them thrive. In New York, I'm Lisa Gray for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.